Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to the TechWise Church, a series on technology designed to inform and equip you and us, all of us, on how to put technology in its proper place and use it, as Robert said, to glorify God in our lives. Let me just begin by saying I love technology. I hope nobody's got the impression that I'm anti-technology or anything like that. I love technology. Right now, my wife, our son Seth, is like 13 and a half months old, and we think he's cutting his one-year molars, so he's been running a fever and been really fussy, but my wife wanted to come to the service, so she brought him, and Seth right now is strapped to her right out there in the foyer, and she's watching this on digital technology out there. So I love technology, and I'll say hi, babe, because I know she's watching. So I love technology. I use it all the time. I use it all the time in my life, and it's good. So far in this series, we've talked about, the first week we looked at, seven biblical realities about technology. So a general theology of technology. We looked at seven things that the Bible teaches us about technology, and we kind of traced that, the theological developments. Basically, we saw that it's a process. All human technologies were initiated, or the technological advances are initiated, intended, and governed by God. And then the next week we looked at, we switched to digital technology in general, and we looked at how, we looked at seven ways that digital technology has changed us. So what is all of this screen time doing to us? What are some changes that it's making in us as people? And while digital technology is good in many ways, we've talked about how it could potentially help us connect with God through like I said, we have access to sermons and Christian music and Christian podcasts and stuff like that. It helps us stay connected with other people, with missionaries overseas, and with loved ones that are across the nation. We can FaceTime and stuff like that. Digital technology is good when it's in its proper place. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about seven ways, seven steps, seven practical suggestions to putting and keeping technology in its proper place. So real quick, before we get to that, anybody need a handout? Raise your hand if you need a handout, and I'll have a student bring it over to you. Guys, we got people with hands up. One of y'all want to grab that stack of handouts? All right, go Carter. All right, make sure everybody gets a handout. Before we get to the seven practical steps of putting technology in its proper place, I want to go over some caveats. So if you don't have a handout yet, it's okay. They're coming around. I'm not filling in blanks yet. I'm going to give some disclaimers. There's a ton of little caveats I need to give. So first, is there so much to say about this topic? There is. I've already talked to some of you about this. There's so much to say about digital technology and what we can do and all of this stuff. There's no way it can possibly be covered in 3 weeks, or much less the practical things we can do in 45 minutes tonight. That's not going to happen. So this is just hopefully some intro to get you thinking about these things, to show you that it's important. It's part of your responsibility and God-given responsibility as a parent, grandparent, as an individual who has access to digital technology to govern these things in a way that honors the Lord. But there's no way I can cover all of that. So if you're interested in more, I'll go ahead and recommend the books again. Read a couple of books. There's a ton. These guys reference a ton more books to read, so the information is limitless on this. So the first one is 12 Ways Your Phone is Changing You. If you want to jot it down on your handout, you can. 12 Ways Your Phone is Changing You by Tony Ranke. Phenomenal book. He's very thorough, and he references many other books that you could go and read if you're interested in more information on that. And then another one, and this one is the one I'll predominantly be speaking out of tonight. It's inspired much of this lesson that you're about to hear. It's called The TechWise Family by Andy Crouch. Very, very good book. Very good book. Very, very practical. And he's all about, while it is about technology, it's about family as well. So you're going to find more information in the books that you read, and it's probably going to be better worded than what you're going to hear tonight from me. So that's the first one. Is there so much to say I can't possibly cover it all? Next is, these are just general suggestions, okay? I'm going to make some general suggestions tonight. I'm not making specific prescriptions to you as an individual or to you and your family. Like, I'm not going to say, do this exactly three times a day, do these three things, and your kid won't look at porn and you won't be addicted to Candy Crush or ESPN. That's not what I'm doing. I'm going to make some general suggestions, and these are for you to consider as an individual and for you to think about and pray about of how you what this would look like for you to implement in your family. Next caveat is some of these are going to seem radical. Some of these are going to seem like radical suggestions. And if you implement these in your life, some of them, some of you are probably doing them already. But for some of us, when we start implementing these things in our life, we're going to be different. We're especially going to be different from the world around us. It doesn't have access to information like this, and it's not interested in these things. But I'll just draw comfort from the fact that the Bible calls us to be different. The Bible calls us to be different. We've been set apart and called out of the world to be different and to honor God in every area of our lives. Not just to be different for different sake. So not just to smugly say, I don't do that stuff, I'm different from you. Like I'm better than you somehow. But no, I'm different because God is my Lord and I love him. And I don't look at those things or listen to that stuff or go to those places because I love the Lord. Not just because I want to be different for different sake. I handle technology this way and with my family in this way because I'm convinced and convicted that this is what glorifies God with how I'm managing my technology. So you'll be different, and some of these will seem radical, but also it's possible to love and use technology. Know this, it's possible to love and use technology in many different forms and still make radical decisions to keep technology from dominating every area of our life. It's possible to love and use it and still put it in its proper place and not allow it to steal some of our most precious memories and sweetest moments in life. So it is possible to do this, but they're going to seem radical. Some of them will. Okay, next and final one. Is this going to look different in each family? This is going to look different in each family. The way you think about and apply these seven suggestions I'm about to give you is going to be different if you're a parent with high school students. It's going to look different if you're a couple and your kids are grown. It's going to look different if you're parents of young kids. It's going to be different if you're single, an individual, applying these things to your life. It's going to look different in the way you think about it and apply them. But I think you're going to find that there's application in all of these. So everything I say tonight, I encourage you to take these suggestions and just consider them. Think about them. Filter everything I say, and I want to encourage you, especially do this, filter everything you do with your technology and your family's technology through this idea that technology, digital technology in particular, is in its proper place in my life as long as it is helping me fulfill God's purpose for my life and as long as it is helping me become the person, the man that God created me to be. Digital technology is out of its proper place when it is hindering that in any way. Okay, so if you can filter all of these suggestions of what you do with your technology and what you do with your kids, if you're bringing them up or whatever, filter it through that. Okay, so with all those many, many caveats, and I'm sure I missed some, but with all those out of the way, seven suggestions to becoming tech-wise. I think the first three or four of these apply to everybody all the time, and I think the last three may be more applicable to parents and grandparents raising young kids, but I think we'll see that there's application in all of them for all of us. It doesn't matter if you're single, you're going to see application in these. It doesn't matter if you're young and you're going to probably start a family someday and you think about these things and remember back on them, what you want your kids to do. Think about what you do with your technology now and say, what do I want for my kids? Do I want more for my kids than what I'm getting now? So we're going to find application in all of these for everyone in the room, I hope. But number one suggestion to becoming tech-wise is create tech-free space in your life. Create tech-free space in your life. So create some tech-free space in your home, preferably a space or a room where you spend most of the time with your loved ones or your family. Find that room. Think about where do I spend most of the time with people I love the most and then try to radically eliminate technology from that room. Try to remove screens from that room. If you think about it, in the past, in history, most homes had a fireplace in them. That's how they heated the house. Most homes had a fireplace in them. And that fireplace represented work. It was rewarding, and it was beautiful, and it was normally in the center of the home. It represented work in the sense that somebody had to go out and chop firewood, Somebody had to gather the firewood, bring it inside. Then somebody had to build a fire, which requires work and it's dangerous, but yet a fire is a beautiful thing. And then the family, on a cold winter night, the family would gather around the fireplace to enjoy that warmth, and it was rewarding. They're interacting with one another in the family room, spending time together. Now we have a furnace. We have a heater. And they're ugly, and they're unrewarding, and they don't require a bunch of work. I can adjust my furnace from my phone. So I can crank the heat up on my phone, and it conveniently pushes heat to the farthest corners of my home, and we can go enjoy heat all by ourselves, isolated in our rooms, and it's ugly. That's why it's normally in a closet or in the attic somewhere, and it's just unrewarding. Now, I'm not saying get rid of your heater. My wife would not go for that. She's always cold. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is create a center. We still need a centerpiece in our home, a center place that's technology-free, where we gather and we work to interact with one another and engage one another and enjoy one another, and it's rewarding with the interaction that we enjoy. So I'm not saying get rid of your heater, and I'm not saying don't ever watch don't ever watch a TV show or don't ever watch a college football game or anything like that. I'm not saying don't ever do those things. I'm just saying don't only do those things. And what happens when we gather in a room where there's a big, beautiful TV is what we normally end up doing is that's a nudge, even if it's unknown or unrecognized. What we normally end up doing is watching TV. And then we're not interacting with each other. We're mindlessly soaking in entertainment rather than interacting with one another. With the screens removed from the room and the room stocked full of books and board games and cookies, what we'll do is we'll be nudged to interact with one another. Even if you live alone and you have company over, gather in the room where there's no technology and you'll find yourself in engaging conversations with one another. Like I said, I'm not saying don't ever watch TV together. I'm not saying don't ever enjoy a college football game together. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying don't only do those things and don't mostly do those things. I would say mostly try to gather in a room where you're enjoying one another, free from technology and free from the distractions. Having tech-free spaces in your home is especially good for the development of little kids. Little kids thrive in environments that are full of just raw material. They'll end up building forts out of blankets, making cardboard whatever, making things out of paper and glue and glitter and all sorts of stuff. They thrive in that environment. If we would just nudge them in that direction, they would love that. So have we done this as a family? What this looks like in our family? We've not done this perfectly by any means. I would say the majority of our kids' lives has not been spent in tech-free spaces. It has been spent in spaces full of technology. But the last 2 months, we've tried to spend more and more time in tech-free spaces, and it's been incredible to see how our kids have responded to that positively. It has been awesome to see how much they've enjoyed that. To whereas Jameson, if you remember, if you were here in week one, I talked about Jameson and how this is one of the reasons we wanted to do this series, or we wanted to start looking into this stuff, is because he was so hooked on technology, wanted to watch shows, wanted to play on the iPad all the time. We've removed that, and he has just thrived in that environment. He's created things and enjoyed playing games and all of that stuff. He just loves it. Kids really thrive in that. We're not meant to spend all of our time in front of technology. So it will be good for us to create tech-free space in our homes where we can gather and enjoy other people and enjoy spending time together. Number two, take daily, weekly, and yearly technology breaks. Take daily, weekly, yearly technology breaks. This is a second suggestion. We were designed by God for a pattern of work and rest. We were designed to work some and rest some. And I'm going to suggest to you to take, in order to rest properly, take daily, weekly, yearly technology breaks away from your devices and away from screens so that you can get the proper rest. God gave us this pattern in the Old Testament. We see him set this pattern for us in Genesis when he created everything in 6 days, and on the seventh day, he rested. Not because he was tired, not because he was exhausted, but he set a pattern for us in that. Because we were designed to, so we work for 6 days, and on the seventh day, we rest. It is fundamental for human flourishing. In Exodus chapter 20, verse 9 through 10, he includes this in the law when he gives this to us. He says, this is for your good. This is why I want you to do this. Exodus chapter 20, verses 9 through 10. It says, 6 days you shall labor, do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. You, your son, your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, or your livestock, or the stranger who is within your gates. So God's people, he included this in the law, God's people were supposed to cease from labor on the seventh day. Completely step aside from labor, set aside labor 1 day a week, bring out the food that was stored up over the week, and feast with their family, with their loved ones. They were called to reflect on what God had done the previous week, to think about what was coming up in the week to come, and to rest. And they called that rest Sabbath, biblical Sabbath rest. But what happened, we were created for this. Like, this is for our good. We were created to do that. But what happens is that we end up falling into a pattern. Instead of work and rest that we were created for, we end up falling into a pattern of toil and leisure. Rather than work and rest, we fall into this pattern of toil and leisure. Toil could be described as fruitless, endless, ceaseless labor, right? And if toil is fruitless, endless labor, then leisure is fruitless escape from labor, okay? So we've all come home from work, or most of us probably have experienced this, where you just felt you worked all day, you did all the things you needed to do, you did all this stuff, and you just feel like you didn't get anything done. You worked so hard, but you didn't get anything accomplished. You just felt like you were spinning your wheels all day. That's toil. And we've also all probably gone on a vacation where we get back from vacation and we're more exhausted than if we would have stayed and worked all week. I'm sure we can all identify with that. That's toil and leisure. While we can't do anything to change much about the nature of our work, sometimes it's just toil and you just got to push through and you got to do that. And apart from changing careers or something like that, sometimes you're just going to have to toil and push through. You can't do much to change the nature of that, but we can change the nature of our rest. When we rest, we can power our devices off. And it's liberating. I'll tell you, it is liberating to turn your phone off intentionally and just say, I'm going to rest from this. So pick 1 day a week and turn your devices off. Turn your screens off. Pick 1 day a week, power the phone down, keep the TV off, spend time in your tech-free space with your family, feast. You cease from your labor and feast with your family and friends. Do things together and enjoy. Think about what the Lord has done the week before and think about what you have coming up in the future week and enjoy one another and rest. Enjoy biblical rest. More than 1 day a week, 1 hour a day, whether it be dinner time or an hour before you go to bed or whatever it is, find an hour a day and power your phone down. Turn your device off and spend time with your family or your loved ones or yourself, if you're single, in your tech-free space. More than 1 day a week, more than one hour a day, 1 week a year. Plan your vacation, set up your email to do an auto-respond, to where the emails are archived, whatever, and then go on vacation without your device and without the distractions of a buzzing phone and emails ringing and things like that. I haven't done that one yet, but I'm excited about it. And enjoy rest. So my family and I have started, how have we done at this? My family and I started 1 hour a day. It was fine and actually really enjoyable. We try to set aside the 1 hour before bed till we turn our phones off, and we go in our living room, and we try to have, you know, we'll have hot tea. The kids will have strawberry milk, popcorn and cookies, or whatever we have ready, and we'll just spend time together in the living room. Seth plays on the carpet. Jameson crawls around and plays with Seth, and me and Randa talk a little bit, and we try to spend an hour together before then we do our little nighttime devotion, and we go to bed, and that's what we try to do. Now, some nights we don't get to do that. Like Wednesday night, tonight we probably won't do it. And on Wednesday nights, we don't because we work late. So we're not legalistic about any of these things. Legalism isn't helpful anywhere. I despise legalism, and that's not helpful in any of these situations. But we do try to be intentional about it, and that's different. And I think we could all probably benefit from a strong dose of intentionality when it comes to managing our technology. So the 1 hour a day was fine and great, and the kids really enjoyed that and responded to that really well. We weren't sure how that was going to go. And then the 1 day a week intimidated me a little bit. I was like, okay, what are we going to do for a whole day without my phone and without the TV to distract the kids who have a lot of energy, and sometimes that helps a lot on Saturdays when we're all at home together. But and I was so while I was wondering what are we going to do, I found we never had a shortage of things to do. We'd get up in the morning and I'd take the kids outside and we'd work in the yard a little bit, and like there's plenty of things to do around the house. We'd get outside in the cool of the day and we'd enjoy those things. We'd come in and eat lunch together. And then in the afternoon, we would spend our time in our family room. Randa would make cookies or whatever, and the kids enjoy helping doing that. And then we sit in the living room, and we play games or whatever there is to do in there. And then we read a little bit, and then we end up napping. And it's glorious, true rest. It's awesome. There's no phones buzzing. There's no TV on. It's awesome. It is really incredible. And it's been really incredible to see how Jameson has responded to that. Whereas he used to fiend and get jittery when he didn't have enough technology in his life. Man, he has just responded so well. And Jackson, too. They have responded so well to this. And it's been fascinating to see. It's been very interesting to see. Because we're created for that. We're created for real relationships with real people. Not thin, flat relationships that are 2D on a screen. Now, if kids don't get the real relationships with real people, they'll relate to that. I was talking to our pastor about this, and that makes sense. They do. He related to Garfield, and he got that. He mindlessly got Garfield because he wasn't getting it from us. But you eliminate the screen, and they just thrive. They love it. They were created to have attention from their parents and to have that engagement, and you just see them developing that way. And it's been so cool to see. And I'm not saying we're perfect at this, because we are not. So when I'm sharing you what we're doing and I'm making these suggestions, we are not doing this perfectly at all, and we fail in many, many ways. But it's been cool to see that. So a quote from Tony Ranke on this. I love this quote. This is what he says. By grace, we are free to power down our phones and simply feast in the presence of friends and enjoy our spouses and our families in the mystery, majesty, and thickness of human existence. I love that quote. That is so good. He says, by grace, we can power down our phones and enjoy people and the thickness of those conversations and the meaningfulness of those relationships. So good. Number three, make sure your technology sleeps longer than you do. Make sure your technology, third suggestion to becoming tech wise and putting and keeping technology in its proper place, make sure your technology sleeps longer than you do. Make sure you wake up before your technology wakes up, and make sure it goes to bed before you go to bed. And I strongly recommend charging your phone in another room of the house beside your bedroom. And take your TVs out of your rooms. I know I'm stepping on toes now, but I think it's, I'm just making, these are my suggestions, remember? If you disagree with me, that's okay. While we were created for patterns of work and rest, a big, huge part of that rest and the way we were created is we were created to sleep. We were created to sleep a lot. We actually spend about a third of our day completely unconscious, virtually motionless, silent, quiet, and completely vulnerable asleep. But what technology has done is it has interrupted and disrupted our sleep patterns, and we need sleep. As so many things happen in our brains while we sleep, it's very important that we sleep good. We need sleep for many reasons. Our brains work like crazy while we're sleeping. While we're asleep, our brains record memories from the day before. They organize information that we learn. There's actually this process that happens where it cleans up, your brain cleans up chemical residue that's been built up in it from the day before. All of this happens while you sleep. Andy Crouch says this happens while we sleep. Athletic and musical skill. So listen to this quote. Athletic and musical skill, which require sophisticated neuromuscular coordination. So think about it. Athletic skill, you need all this muscular coordination. And musical skill, do your fingers and all those things. It requires sophisticated neuromuscular coordination. That stuff advances dramatically while you sleep. Those things that you learn during the day are cemented in your brain while you sleep. Sleep seems in a strange way to be where learning required to be an accomplished human being actually happens. Heart, mind, soul, and strength are nourished while we sleep. But technology, digital technology, disrupts that. Our homes, one of the most basic functions of a home and a bedroom in a home is to provide a safe place where we can get this restful sleep that we so desperately need to be fully functioning human beings. And technology, digital technology, has invaded our bedrooms, invaded our homes, and disrupted our sleep patterns, and we need to get that back. And this problem is especially true for teenagers. This problem is especially true for teenagers. They have their phones with them, the privacy of their room, into the wee hours of the morning, and it lends itself, it disrupts their sleep, number one, that they need to develop, and it lends itself, gives them the opportunity to make bad decisions. You just think about it. A phone by bed. Think about being a teenager. What happens, we know, in adolescence when about 12 or 13 years old, the brain develops a little bit, and you become aware for the first time of what other people are thinking. So you become aware of what other people are thinking about you, and you crave approval from them, and you fear disapproval from them. And what a phone has done, with a phone by a bed in a teenager's room, it has made it possible for the messages to stream in all night long. The messages can stream in. I got a message from a friend. Somebody commented on my post. Nobody commented on my post. I was added to a group text. I was taken out of a group text. All of these send messages to students, positive and negative messages that we crave and fear, and it disrupts sleep. I have seen this firsthand in students showing up on Sunday morning very tired because they've been up all night on their phone. Further, it lends itself the opportunity to make bad decisions. Darkness at nighttime, plus extreme fatigue and a cell phone, lends itself, that is a situation that is prime for a foolish choice to be made. It gives, often teenagers are looking at sexual content on their phones. Disturbingly enough, teenagers are creating and producing and sending sexually explicit images and videos late at night. And even the most beefy internet filter cannot filter this stuff out of messaging apps through text messaging and through apps like Snapchat, self-destructing messaging apps like Snapchat. The most high-tech internet, sophisticated internet filters in the world can't stop these messages from coming in. So let me pause this real quick and talk to parents about Snapchat. I've been promising to do this. I just want to give a little bit of information about Snapchat. What Snapchat is, it's a messaging app. It's where the messages in the app self-destruct. I just want to give you a little bit of information on it, and then you can make the decision of whether you want your student to have Snapchat or not. So what Snapchat does is it gives people the ability, you have all of these members connected with this app, and it gives them the ability to take a picture of something or a video of something and add a little text message to it, and then they can send it to somebody else who's got an account on Snapchat, and then that message will self-destruct after a certain amount of time. Most of those messages vanish and disappear from both phones, unless it's screenshotted or unless the settings are changed to where it stays there permanently or whatever. But most of the time, those messages disappear. This is the number one app that teenagers use to exchange sexually explicit images and videos with one another. That is a number one app used to do that because the messages can be sent and they disappear. Bullying, your students can send or receive or just horrible messages, whether it's a text, picture, video, or whatever, and then they disappear from both phones. So it gives the opportunity for that. And also, there are companies like Cosmopolitan Magazine, ESPN, other pop culture magazines and companies that advertise or that own property on Snapchat. So not only do you message back and forth, but you can swipe a certain way, and then you can read headlines. You can read magazine articles or news headlines or sports stories or whatever it is. Some of those are fine, and some of those are downright pornographic. 30 years ago, some of the stuff on these advertisements would have been considered pornography, especially from like Cosmopolitan Magazine. A recent headline was, "Swipe up to read what sex does to your brain." I mean, an article in Cosmopolitan Magazine, and you just have to decide, do I want my seventh grade boy to swipe up and learn from Cosmopolitan Magazine about what sex does to your brain? Now, not all Snapchat is bad. Not all Snapchat is bad. We've used it in the student ministry before. It's got really fun filters. You can have a ton of fun with it. Students can use it and just message each other back and forth and send goofy pictures and videos and stuff like that. And so it's not all bad. And I'm not saying if your student has Snapchat that it's all bad or that they've sent or received bad images or anything like that. I'm just saying it has the capacity to do that. You need to know what it's able to do. And then you make the decision of whether you want your student to have that or not. That's completely up to you. Okay, back to the technology interrupting our sleep. TVs in the rooms. Man, they've been doing that research since the 80s. TVs on while you sleep are not good. It interrupts your sleep. You're hearing things and your brain is recording that your eyes are sensing the light change as the picture moves. They just say, don't sleep with the TV on. You don't sleep good. And with a phone buzzing next to your bed, you don't sleep good either. So my suggestion to you is tuck your phones in to bed. Have a place in the middle of your home. We charge ours in the kitchen where we just plug our little phones in. We let them feast all night long on the charger. They're good and charged. When we wake up, ready for a new day, and we go to bed. And we get our phones up after we get up. I don't look at my phone. I've had to really discipline myself to do this. I don't look at my phone until after I've spent time with the Lord. So normally around 7 or 7:15, and that's hard. In the morning when I get up, I want to see if somebody emailed me or if I got an important text message or what did I miss, you know, in the news or whatever. Those updates will be there, and I want to look at them, but I said, that will wait. It will be there in a minute, and I go spend time with the Lord, and I come back, and it's all there. I'm ready. I've spent time with God in His Word and in prayer, and now I'm ready to handle whatever my digital device throws at me. So that is my suggestion to you. That's what we, and like I said, we've done this pretty well as a family. Randa still charges her phone in our room. I don't have her fully convinced on this. No, I'm kidding. She charges it across the room because I think she likes to snooze. Sometimes she's up with Seth, and so my alarm will go off. I'll get up, and she'll snooze a little bit longer. So what if you're a parent of a high school student and your high school student has been taking their phone to bed with them since they've had it, you know? I mean, you've never really thought about this or whatever. I'm not shaming you for that. We hadn't either until I read this book. So we hadn't thought about it either. So what do? Your student won't respond well if you go in there and say, hey, we're going to start tucking our phones into the living room, and you're not going to take your phone to bed with you anymore. My advice to you is number one, God's given you the responsibility and the authority to raise your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And if you feel like your student is mature enough or whatever, they've shown themselves faithful and they're not making too many foolish decisions, and you trust them with their phone in the room, and then they're not going to be up till 3 o'clock in the morning, they just use it as an alarm or whatever, that's completely up to you to make that decision. I back you 100%. I trust you. You're their parent, not me. But if you're the parent of a high school student, you say, they've been making foolish decisions with this, and they've not shown, you know, and I'm worried about them. I want to protect them from this or whatever. I feel like this could be a potential problem, a real problem. Then make that hard decision and make that call and just communicate that I'm doing this because I love you. Not because I hate you and I want to steal your phone from you. That is not why. It's I want to protect you from, I want you to sleep. You need sleep. And I know that you're up till 3 o'clock Snapchatting with your friends. And I want you to sleep. So we're going to charge our phones in the living room. And sometimes you have to make that tough call as a parent. I don't know who said this quote. I liked it. It was good. Maybe it was Pastor Jeff. He's always saying wise stuff about parenting. But it was parent now, make the hard parenting choices now so that you can be their friend later. You know, too many times we get that backwards. It's like, I want to be their friend now. I don't want them to not like me now. And that's true, and I think that's good. I'm not saying you have to be their enemy, but be their parent too. And so that when they're adults, you can enjoy their friendship. You've raised a fully functioning, godly, God-loving adult, and you can enjoy that. So that's my advice on that. Number four, delay and limit exposure to technology. Delay and limit exposure to technology. This is particularly for parents and grandparents of young kids. The author of this book, the Tech Wise Family, Andy Crouch, he was the senior editor for Christianity Today, so he's pretty established and all that stuff. They did no screens for any of their kids before they were 10 years old. No screens. No screens at home, no screens at church, and no screens at school. So they fought for that. Now, I'm not pushing that. I'm saying That's pretty radical. But I get his point. And if you out there, if you're like, no, we're going to do it. We're doing no screens before 10. I'm with you 100%. I see it. I get this guy's point totally. His point was, number one, are we not going to spend enough time in front of screens as adults? I mean, do we not spend enough time in front of a TV, in front of a computer, in front of my phone all the time as adults? The least we can do is give our kids this first few years of life free from a television, enjoying God's beautiful creation, and developing and learning. And that's the main thing, developing and learning bodily. Like, we were created to learn in a physical environment with our physical bodies. There's all sorts of, the teachers in the room can probably attest to this. Randa was a teacher, her mom was a teacher, her dad was a teacher. It's like they try to get kids to engage with things and to use their bodies because you learn better that way. You learn better when you're moving and you learn better when you're physically touching things and experiencing the world with your senses. You learn better with a pencil in your hand, like pressing on a piece of paper, having to form letters physically, and then shade or whatever. You press hard to make it dark, and you lighten up to make it great. You learn better that way, engaging all those parts of your brain and your body, than you do typing on a keyboard, or than you do moving your finger around on a screen. It is important for the development of young kids. They were meant to learn bodily. So I suggest to delay and limit exposure to technology. Digital technology makes learning too easy. It makes learning far too easy for us. The worst thing you can do, resistance is important in learning, and the worst thing you can do for a kid trying to learn something is to make it too difficult and crush their spirit, or to make it too easy for them. And that's what most digital learning applications do, is the learning games, the math games, the English games, or whatever they are. You say, well, he's allowed to play on the iPad, but he only does learning games. Okay, that's good, but it could be better, because those apps were designed, since they're designed to keep our attention and stuff, they're designed to be easily figured out. We figure them out, and we master them too easily, and then we just end up doing the same thing over and over again for 4 hours. So delay exposure and limit exposure to technology. So this begs the question, will my student be behind if I delay and limit their exposure to technology? Will they be behind in the world? If I, especially in their early years, 5, 6, 7, 8 or whatever, I try to keep them from digital technology, will they be behind in the world? And I would argue emphatically, no. No, if they're learning and developing physically. If they're learning by reading physical books and rereading physical books and learning to write with a pencil and paper by forming cursive letters with their hands and shading things, if they spend the first 8 years of their lives learning that way and building forts outside and collecting bugs and making slime and stuff like that with their hands, and that's how they're learning, I think they're going to be fully capable of figuring out every digital program that they need to do to be a functioning human being in the world today. If they spend their early years doing that, they'll be able to learn Microsoft Word and Microsoft PowerPoint in a flash. I think those programs were meant to be learned easily. Most of the programs that are on computers are meant to be easily learned. They're user-friendly. That's the point. So, like I said, we're going to spend a ton of our lives tethered to our digital devices. We can give our kids these early years of tech-free. Now, there's an important caveat here. There is some reliable research showing that digital devices are helping autistic children communicate with their parents and with their teachers at an early age. So, praise God for that. I would say at an early age, digital technology has a proper place in that situation. So I'm not speaking to that. I'm talking about regular everyday parenting. So how have we done at this, delaying and limiting exposure to technology? Horrible. We have failed miserably at this. I'm pretty sure Seth has already seen Star Wars, and he may have watched Harry Potter. It depends on what you believe about that, whether I'll confirm or deny that. But we have failed miserably at this. So we are not trying to be legalistic about this. Here's what we're doing, and you can jot these down if you want. We're going to try to eliminate 100% unaccompanied screen time. So we're going to try to eliminate situations where Seth is sitting there watching a TV by himself like this, or where Jameson or any of them, we're going to try to eliminate unaccompanied screen time. And then we're going to try to greatly reduce social screen time. So we're going to ask ourselves, is there something better we could be doing together? If y'all are going to sit there and watch TV, is there something better we could be doing? If there's not, and we just give up, all right, let's watch TV. That's fine. But we're going to try to eliminate completely unaccompanied screen time and then reduce greatly the social screen time. All right, number five. Number five and six are quick, so I'm going to get through them pretty quick. Number five, make tech time purposeful and interactive. Make technology time purposeful and interactive. So this one applies predominantly to parents and grandparents as well, aunts and uncles, and you guys in the future, youth in the future, think about this. Make tech time purposeful and interactive. When we use screens, we want to use them for a purpose, and we want to use them together. rather than mindlessly and alone, boringly, okay? Because technology has this unique ability to make us bored and boring without us ever knowing how bored and boring we are, right? Have you ever, okay, so you watch people play video games, and they're just like, if they're on their phone, they're like this, right? If they're watching a screen like this, and Jameson always says, you want to watch me play? You want to watch me play this? Like, no, I don't want to watch. That's the most boring thing in the world. I do not. I think I finally got Jameson to get this. Talking about Phineas and Ferb. Who knows what Phineas and Ferb is? Yeah, it's good. Okay, I still like Phineas and Ferb. It's a good show. So Phineas and Ferb, Jameson loves it. It's a show of these two little boys on their summer break, and they go through all these adventures, and they make spaceships, and I could probably sing the song to you, but I won't. And they do all these different adventures, and Jameson would just watch three episodes in a row. And then to convince him of this, I was like, dude, okay, so do you understand how boring that is? Like, you're just sitting there watching TV, soaking it in. And I was like, Phineas and Ferb, what do? And he's like, well, they go on adventures, and they go exploring, and they build these things. I was like, have you ever seen an episode of Phineas and Ferb where they just sit there and watch TV? It's like, no, because that's boring, but that's what you're doing. You know, like, let's go out and do these things that Phineas and Ferb are doing. Like, let's build something and, you know, pretend it's a time machine or something. You know, like, let's use our imagination and do it. Instead of, let's make our technology time purposeful and interactive instead of boring. So the general rule is to try to keep the TV time purposeful. When we sit down to watch TV, we want to make it purposeful and interactive. If we're watching a college football game, let's look for opportunities to wonder at God's creative abilities and how he's created these athletes to accomplish such great things. Let's notice that, and let's interact about that. When we're scrolling through social media together, which we do, we're looking for, and we're going to encourage our friends and family, and we're going to thank God for our friends and family. It's going to be purposeful and interactive, not mindless and boring. We're doing much better. How are we doing as a family on this one? Doing much better. We're trying to be intentional about this. When we watch things on TV, we try to watch them together and talk about them so that it's not so boring. Number six, car time is conversation time. The in-car DVD player has made it possible for us to cast a calming spell over our wild and reckless kids. They get in the car all crazy, and we turn on that little glowing rectangle, and they're calm. And it's wonderful. But it robs us of meaningful conversations, and it robs us of opportunities to model wisdom and patience with our kids. There's something about the car that brings out the worst in us, right? Brings out the worst in people. A car, we're all cooped up in the same spot on a road trip for however long, and it just brings out the worst in us. But that gives us the opportunity, a unique opportunity, for our kids to see us model wisdom and patience. So we can show them wisdom, how to handle the car situation, and we can show them patience as everybody's getting on everybody's nerves and how we handle that. And also, it gives us the opportunity to have meaningful conversations. Meaningful conversations. Statistics say it takes about 7 minutes before a conversation turns meaningful. And we normally nip those out before they ever get to 7 minutes by turning on a digital device. So after about, it's chit-chat for about 7 minutes, and then somebody says something risky, somebody says something meaningful, somebody asks a question, and you have a good conversation. But the in-car DVD players have almost eliminated that. So it's better to have conversations with one another. If you have young kids, sing silly songs with them. They love it. If you have older kids, listen to music with them. Play games. Play the license plate game. Try to engage each other in the car. That's a suggestion. Seek to make car time conversation time. Number seven. Last one. Number seven. Spouses share passwords. Parents have total access to kids' phones. Spouses share passwords, and kids and parents have total access to kids' phones. Pornography is everywhere. They say over 30%, between 30 and 40% of all internet traffic, all the activity that happens on the internet is pornographic. Throughout history, pornography says that sex is easy everywhere. Pornography says that sex is easy everywhere. Throughout history, sex has not been easy. It takes wisdom and courage to develop a relationship and then intimacy. And sex has not been everywhere. It was reserved for marriage in the home. Pornography makes sex easy. Digital technology makes sex easy. You can access it anywhere, anytime, in whatever form you like. And it makes it everywhere in the sense that we carry these little digital devices in our pockets. Most of them have access to pornography at any time. I'm going to share with you a statistic that was absolutely astounding and bothersome. The most prolific producers and creators of pornography, the people who create the most and put the most out there, are not professional pornographers. They're not the people in the studios. They're ordinary people, the vast majority of them teenagers. Okay, statistics say, this year, 62% of American teenagers have received a sexually explicit image or video on their phone through a messaging app. And this is what blew my mind. Over 40% of American teenagers have created and sent one. That was shocking to me. That was mind-blowing to me. And it means that it's very possible that many of our youth have been affected by this in one way or the other, have been affected by either receiving one, unwanted or wanted, or creating one and sent one. And that breaks my heart. And I just want to say, if anybody in here has been affected by that in any way, by the sending or receiving, or if anybody has made a mistake in that, I'm not shaming you. That is not the goal in any of this. It is to point you to God's grace. God's grace is bigger than any of those mistakes that you've made. If you've been involved in this, take it to him in repentance and you'll find him gracious and forgiving. Do not let that ruin you. But porn is everywhere. The horrible truth is that porn is addicting. And like any addiction, it's a lie. It promises sex easy everywhere, like I said, but really what it does is it completely corrodes and erupts and destroys any ability for true intimacy with a real person. And that is tragic. It's sad that it has affected so many of our young people and old people alike. And every single parent in this room would say they want to save their kid from that, right? I want to save my kid from that. Like, I do not want my kid to be exposed to the damaging, horrific evils of pornography, the destroying lie of pornography. But the truth is we can't. Like, we cannot keep our kids from it. If you're a parent of a teenager, it's very likely that your kid's already been exposed to it. It's very likely. So while we cannot, the goal is not to put them in a bubble. So what do we do as parents? The goal is not to put them in a bubble and protect them from this. It's impossible. So if pornography is a germ, the goal is not to put them in a bubble and keep them from it. The goal is to build a healthy immune system so when they're exposed to the germ, they can fight it off. And how do we do that? Let me give you a few things. We're almost done. A few things. First and foremost, like I said, develop a healthy immune system. First thing to that is teach them the gospel. Talk to them about the gospel. Talk to them about Jesus Christ, his death for sin. Like, he died for that. Like, that is despicable. God hated that so much, his son had to die for that. Teach them the gospel. Teach them what God's word says about sex. Teach them that it's beautiful. God created sex to be a beautiful thing. It's not bad. It's a beautiful thing in its proper place, in the context of marriage. That's what that was created for. Teach them that. Help them to build that healthy immune system. We can also give our kids a full life, like one we've been talking about, one where they have relationship with their parents, where they know their parents, they spend time with their parents in tech-free space, where their parents are taking technology breaks to show them that you're important to me, I want to spend time with you. Give them this full life where they have real conversations in the car with you and where they're spending real time with real people. Number two, you can have a web filter, okay? So even if they have a healthy immune system, sometimes you still need to wear rubber gloves, right? Keep yourself from getting sick. Have a web filter. I'm going to give you a couple if you want to write them down. OpenDNS, one word, OpenDNS is a great internet filter. It connects to the Wi-Fi and filters the activity on that. We'll filter out sexually explicit material. There's also good programs you can put on phones. I'm going to tell you the name of one, OurPact. It's one word, OurPact. One word, you search for that in the App Store. What that does is that connects your phone to your student's phone or to your kid's phone. And what it does is it gives you the ability to, it puts a web filter on their phone, but also you can disable and control and put time limits on the apps on their phone. So if you say, I want my student to only be able to talk in text. You can disable everything else on their phone. Safari won't even be there, or the web browser won't even be there. You can say, or if you want your kid to be able to play Fortnite or have face or Instagram or whatever, but you only want them to spend an hour a day, you can set a time limit and they'll have to, they can use that hour and then it shuts it off. Or if you say they can have unlimited access during the day, but I want it shut off at 10 o'clock at night, it can disable all that. You can set all of those, you can customize all that stuff. I think Apple iOS has a similar system that they've come out with recently. Now, this is not to feed the power-hungry part of us, right? Okay, this is not to say I'm going to micromanage every area of your life and you're not going to have any apps. You know, you get 5 minutes on this a day. It's not so that you can be an overbearing helicopter parent. It's like, if you think this is why, I want you to know it's out there, okay? You can do it. If you need to protect your students from things, you can on their phones. Not to feed the control freak. Have love as your motive. Okay, have openness and accountability. New technologies come out every day. Web filters won't be able to catch them all. Have openness and accountability. Make sure your students know technology is free, everybody. Husband and wife set the example for this as they share each other's passwords. They're free to grab each other's phone at any time. There's no secrecy there. But also make sure your students understand that I have total access to your phone. I have total access to your phone at any time. Now, some parents would think that this would be an invasion of their kids' privacy. And maybe in some cases it is. But I think you can do this with wisdom and tact. Okay, you can still leave plenty of room for your kid to have privacy and freedom. And still have total access to their phone. You don't have to. You're not monitoring their thoughts, their secret thoughts. You're not following them around, monitoring their conversations. You're not following them around in school, listening to all their conversations. You haven't bugged their car to hear what they're talking about. They can still have plenty of freedom, and you have full access to their phone. What you're doing is you're recognizing that there are grown people whose brains have fully developed, who profess to know the Lord, and who are living seemingly godly lives that struggle with this, that fail to manage the temptation of internet pornography. Grown people. So I'm not going to expect my teenage student who hasn't fully developed to have unlimited access to the internet and a smartphone on their own. What I'm doing is recognizing that I got full access to your phone so I can see if you're struggling with something. I want to help you. I love you. I don't want you to fall into this. So that is my suggestion there. Now, on the same note, I also understand that students can delete text messages. They can delete images off their phone, clear browser history, use an app like Snapchat that automatically deletes it. There's no way to stop those things. But by doing these things, what you've done is you've instilled family values. You spent time with them and developed relationships. You've told them what you expect from them. You've taught them the gospel. You've taught them how God created sex. They know that if they choose to do something on their phones, that's access something inappropriate or do something inappropriate on their phones, they know they're violating family values and they know they're violating biblical morality. That is completely different from giving them a phone with unlimited access to the internet and just saying, figure it out. You know, figure it out through, stumble your way through adolescence and life. So I strongly recommend you to implement that in whatever way that that looks like. Okay, so that's it. We talked about seven things the Bible teaches about tech, seven ways that digital technology has changed us, and now we've looked at seven practical suggestions to help you put technology in its proper place so that you can live the life that you were created to live. We were made for more than what technology can offer us by itself. We were made for real relationships. We were made to develop and learn bodily, to have real relationships with people, to have real conversations with real people, and technology can't give us that. So, put technology in its proper place, and it's in its proper place as long as it's helping you and your children become the people that they were created to be, as long as it's helping them fulfill God's purpose for their lives. Technology is in its proper place. If it's not, if it's hindering that in any way, it's out of whack, and we got to keep that in check. So, I pray that you'll consider these and consider implementing them. Right, like I said, think about what that looks like for your family and whatever phase of life that you're in. I hope that we all could learn something from this tonight. Let's pray. Almighty God, we thank you so much for all that you've done for us, Lord. We thank you for your son, Jesus Christ, that he came to save sinners. And God, I thank you that even though we fail you so many times, we fail you day in and day out, you love us. You love us because we're in Christ, and we are so grateful for that. God, I pray that you'd be with us as a church made up of individuals and families. I pray that you would give us wisdom and understanding about technology, digital technology in particular. God, and I pray that you'd give us grace to put and keep technology in its proper place. I pray that we'd be an example to the world around us in the way that we handle our technology and the way that we use it for your glory and your purposes. And I pray that we would all, every single one of us in here, think about these things that we've talked about and implement them in whatever way that we can in our lives so that we glorify you in that area of our life. And I just pray that you'd make it so. Give us grace to do that, God, and we'll be grateful. I pray that you would forgive us where we failed you in this area, God, but help us not to despair. Help us to just get back up and go at it again. And we thank you for your grace. We love you. Be with us as we go, and we'll be grateful if you bring us back together on Wednesday night. In Jesus' name, amen.